Whispers of Oxenfurt, an ASMR podcast dedicated to the Witcher universe by Polish author Andrzej Sapkowski.
All right. I apologize to anyone that hates ASMR. I've never done that before, so if this is your first time listening, that won't happen again. Well, unless I do a special one about it, but probably not. So, first things first, I purchased the Witcher pen and paper RPG, and I rolled a character, a random Witcher, and it was a Redanian who grew up in Novigrad. Parents were killed by the plague. The brother and sister survived as well, but whereabouts are unknown. This Witcher was taken in early childhood, trained at the School of the Cat. He acquired stolen knowledge, snuck into libraries, and copied diagrams. They received extra mutations, as they were very receptive to the Trial of the Grasses. Most important event was fighting alongside a knight. They made a friend with a female soldier met while traveling. The last hunt was a relic in a graveyard in a surprisingly easy fight, and they are currently on the path looking for work. So that's just something that was really fun to do. If you want me to roll you a character, just let me know, tweet at me, send me an email, and tell me if you want to be a human, a Nilfgaardian, a dwarf, an elf, or a witcher. And I'll roll you some things like that. It gets kind of random, but there's a ton of options, and it's really fun. One thing I've kind of been exploring, and based on that, is a potential story-based podcast, kind of like an audiobook form. I'm probably not going to do it, as it would require a lot of time to do right. It's just something I'm kind of exploring about. So if you have any suggestions or whatever, let me know. But again, it's just kind of being tossed out. Something in any kind of spare time, I'm just kind of writing ideas about, putting in my phone. So it's probably not going to happen, but it might. Our discussion afterwards today will be about witchcraft in the European medieval world. We get an example of it in this chapter, and we will discuss some documented cases of it. And we'll head into the early modern period as well. So it's not just medieval, as we'll kind of discuss about why it's not so much medieval. So with that out of the way, let's discuss Baptism of Fire, Chapter 4. The group departs from Fencarn and soon runs into a group of peasants looking for a vampire. They have stakes and holy water to get rid of their pest. They demand Milva's black horse, and she responds about how you would expect, after an insult by one of the peasants, telling her to basically get back in the kitchen. She strikes his face and almost kills him. She then vomits. The man survives, albeit very concussed, and Zoltan tells Regis that she has vomited like that before. Dandelion says vampires don't tear victims apart, they bite an artery, and most of the time the person survives. Regis then spills forth his knowledge of all types of vampires, impressing Geralt. They make their way to a refugee camp. The symphony, as usual, can be heard and smelled, Regis observed, quivering the nostrils of his noble nose. This community, as it fights for survival, gives off the delicious fragrance of boiled cabbage, a vegetable without which survival would apparently be impossible. The characteristic olfactory accent is also being created by the effects of bodily functions, carried out in random places, most often on the outskirts of the camp. I've never understood why the fight for survival manifests itself in a reluctance to dig latrines. "To hell with your smart-arse chatter," said Milva in annoyance. 3 dozen fancy words when 3 will do. It stinks of shit and cabbage." So Milva, as always, summed things up very, very distinctly. At this refugee camp, they depart with the women and children, as some of them have found their husbands and brothers. Zoltan offers up yet another sobering take on the human race. I predict a bad end for your race, humans, Zoltan Shive said grimly. Every sentient creature on this earth, when it falls into want, poverty, and misfortune, usually cleaves to his own, because it's easier to survive the bad times in a group, helping one another. But you humans, you just wait for a chance to make money from other people's mishaps. When there's hunger, you don't share out your food. You just devour the weakest ones. Soon a man approaches them and demands blood money for the injury to Milva's victim. They all say to allow Hector Lobbs, the headman, to arbitrate this dispute, but he is currently sitting in judgment of a witch. A girl of 16 is tied to the rack of a wagon laden with sacks. She is accused of making a pact with a vampire and hexing the populace. A priest is rousing up the crowd with talks of magic and sorcery. He says since the dawn of time, woman has been the root of all evil. This comes into play in our reality amongst the belief in original sin from the book of Genesis. So this is more of a Judeo-Christian belief. That is Eve tempting Adam in the Garden of Eden, thus woman causing the downfall of humanity. These people tend not to think that Adam could have said no, that he was weak, just a tempting harlot, of course. Dandelion claims that this is about politics and not vaginas. Zoltan adds that this is about money. Subject her to a baptism of fire, the priest cries out over shouts of burn her at the stake. Hector steps up and says, I am the elder. Establish her guilt if you want to punish her. The proof they have to establish that guilt is that she boiled a cat alive. Percival then describes the cat to a T because he is looking right at it, still alive. So that's the end of the trial. Of course, we then go to a trial by ordeal, a baptism of fire. Geralt and Zoltan say, I challenge anyone to a duel. Milva challenges anyone to an archery contest. The priest, of course, has other ideas and says the person will have to pick up a horseshoe from a fire, and if they show no burns or marks, then she is innocent. I have spoken! Regis then calmly picks up the horseshoe and, of course, has no marks on him. The divine judgment is unambiguous. And now everyone can calmly go back to, oh no, because Nilfgaard is attacking. Geralt gets knocked out in the ensuing attack and darkness. Ciri screams out in night terror and says someone I once knew was being trampled by horses. Geralt awakens, tied up by Temerian soldiers. Nobody in the company but Dandelion is in sight. They are taken to a military camp where King Foltest's liaison officer, Daniel Echeverry, recognizes Dandelion and unties them. The bard says that he is traveling with Geraldus here. So, hey, real quick on your feet, Dandelion, to say something completely different. The Centurion commander, Marshal Visigerd, is in charge and recognizes Geralt with disdain. He chastises Geralt for claiming Ciri as his surprise child. He was there when Dooney arrives on Pavetta's 15th birthday. They are accused of being Nilfgaardian spies. The marshal tells him, back then in Sintra, 15 years ago, a great deal was said about destiny. At the time, I thought it was nonsense. But it turned out to be your destiny, Witcher. Ever since that night, your fate has been sealed, written in black runes amongst the stars. Ciri, daughter of Pavetta, is your destiny and your death. Because of Ciri, daughter of Pavetta, you shall hang. So to get into the European medieval belief of witchcraft and all that, we of course have to go to the later part of the Roman Empire. Augustine of Hippo, that Saint Augustine, or if you want to say Augustine to pronounce it incorrectly, basically established the doctrine of original sin that we mentioned earlier. But he also taught the non-existence of witchcraft. This, and most of what he did, had a massive influence on the early medieval period, which is why you just don't see that much of the witchcraft and witches around that time. The church simply didn't believe in it, so they would not investigate cases or accusations of it. They were very few and far between. The Council of Paderborn in 785 denied the existence of witchcraft completely and officially, and condemned witch hunters to execution. So those that went after witches and persecuted them were then subjected to execution and punishment themselves. Believing in magic itself was heretical and punishable by death. It doesn't exist. It exists as something outside of it. Anything supernatural you're doing is basically claiming God-like powers. Heresy, or teachings against church doctrine, and dogma, was the main concern of the medieval church, not folk magic and all that rubbish to them. The expansion of witchcraft, or practice slash belief in it, was due to the idea of making a pact with the devil, which is kind of what we got in this story. She made a pact with the vampire, but it's basically like a demon. This is important, as you are not being possessed by the devil or demon unwillingly. Making a pact is of your own volition, and you are responsible for your actions. Sealing these pacts would usually involve intercourse with the devil or cannibalism of babies. One of those seems much more pleasing than the other, but I guess if you like sex that much, then, all right, 12 minutes, okay, I need to edit that out. Philip IV of France the Fair is best remembered for his persecution and destruction of the Knights Templar. He did them in by declaring them heretical devil worshippers and burned the last Grand Master, Jacques de Molay, at the stake. Philip also feuded with the Pope, Boniface VIII, and had him captured and nearly beaten to death. As a result of this and other actions, the papacy moved to Avignon, then part of the Holy Roman Empire, now in modern-day France, thus resulting in the Avignon papacy. He posthumously had the new pope try Boniface for sodomy and, you guessed it, heresy. Dante of Dante's Inferno also has Boniface in hell, so he was clearly not very well liked. Estimates range up to 100,000 people were executed in the period between 1500 and 1750 across Europe and North America. Now, mainly, it was Europe. But the most famous in America is, without question, to me, the Salem witch trials. I imagine due to American cultural hegemony that they are well known elsewhere, but that I don't know. 19 people were executed by hanging, and one was crushed to death. Now, out of this comes the notion of trial by ordeal. These trials, such as in this chapter, include holding onto red-hot irons or other pieces of metal. Rather than instantly checking the wounds, as they did in this story, as people would always be wounded in real life, they would instead check it several days later. If it was healing, then God intervened, and certainly he would not help a guilty person. So this person was innocent. If it was festering, then God had clearly turned his back on them, and they were guilty. You know, big brain medieval logic right there. They also walked across hot plowshares and other ordeals by fire. The most famous one that I know of, mainly because it took place during the First Crusade, was that of Peter Bartholomew. Nobles didn't believe that he talked with Christ, God, and the former spiritual leader of the crusade, so he willingly put himself through an ordeal by fire. He was severely burned in the process and died 12 days later. So, make of that what you will. Now, we'll exit the medieval period and we'll go to the early modern period, and this takes place during the 30 Years' War. And I'm going to speak about the Würzburg Witch Trials is German, so W is a V. But I was going to say Würzburg Witch Trials. But no, the Würzburg Witch Trials took place during the 30 Years' War, a series of religious conflicts between Protestants and Catholics taking place mainly in the Holy Roman Empire of Central Europe. I believe the years was 1618 to 1648. That was the 30 Years' War. This is not the time period we're talking about. An estimated 900 were executed during the Würzburg trials, usually by being beheaded and burned at the stake, although only 150 or so were confirmed. In August 1629, the chancellor of the Prince Bishop of Würzburg wrote to a friend, "Ah, the woe and the misery of it. There are still 400 in the city of every rank and sex, even clerics, so strongly accused that they may be arrested at any hour. It is true that of the people of my gracious prince here, some out of all offices and faculties must be executed. Clerics, electoral counselors, doctors, city officials, court assessors, several of whom your grace knows. There are law students to be arrested. The prince bishop has over 40 students who are soon to be pastors. Among them, 13 or 14 are said to be witches. A few days ago, a dean was arrested. Two others who were summoned have fled. The notary of our church consistory, a very learned man, was arrested yesterday and put to the torture. In a word, a third part of the city is surely involved. The richest, most attractive, most prominent of the clergy are already executed. A week ago, a maiden of 19 was executed, of whom it is everywhere said that she was the fairest in the whole city and held by everybody, a girl of singular modesty and purity. She will be followed by 7 or 8 others of the best and most attractive persons. And thus many are put to death for renouncing God and being at the witch dances, against whom nobody has ever spoken a word. To conclude this wretched matter, there are children of 3 and 4 years to the number of 300 who are said to have had intercourse with the devil. I have seen put to death children of 7, promising students of 10, 12, 14, and 15 of the nobles, but I cannot and must not write more of this misery. There are persons of yet higher rank whom you know and would marvel to hear of, nay, would scarcely believe it. Let justice be done." So again, yes, children were absolutely executed. And this guy, he says that he saw 7, 10, 12, 14, 15-year-olds being put to death for intercourse. So the main accusations for witchcraft, take your pick. A rival, someone better looking than them. An unworthy mate, wanting their land. Simple misogyny and control over women, which was a big one. Bloodlust. A vagrant. Being in the wrong place at the wrong time. Those are all documented reasons, and it just simply depends on the case. In this chapter, judging by the girl laughing at what is happening, it seems she is mentally disturbed and incapable of realizing exactly what is going on. They assume this is a possession and just want to get their bloodlust on. We get to see someone saved from a witch trial. I imagine this is Sapkowski's way of writing a real-life wrong. If only something like this would happen for real. But it doesn't. Mass hysteria will always reign in differing layers and waves, but it is still around today, even in developed countries. We like to think we are so evolved from looking back at history, but whatever helps us sleep at night. Unfortunately, for many of those victims we learned about today, there was no witcher or vampire nearby, and no help from above to save the day. Send all comments, questions, suggestions, anything you want to maybe hear about or hear me talk about to witcherpodcast@gmail.com. You can also find me on Twitter @witcherpodcast. So one last thought before we get on out of here is I do think it's a viable criticism of this book and of these chapters that the plot isn't really going forward, especially with Ciri. And while Time of Contempt was definitely about Ciri, and while Baptism of Fire is definitely about Geralt, it seems like, again, that especially with these two chapters, which are great for character, like I'm not complaining about that, they've been fantastic, especially good to talk about. And it's putting together this Hansa, putting together this group that we know in the future of the importance. But it's just, especially with Ciri, is she's just treading water and nothing's there. And they did hit on here, which was good, that again, slipping away, further slipping away, where it's someone I once knew. So she's not even recognizing Geralt or realizing, oh, that's Geralt. That's the father figure. That's the person who would either be closest or second closest after Yen. And so while it is showing her, again, further slipping, it's just kind of there. But it is great characterization, great dialogue. So no complaints there. But next week, the group gets a little bigger as a certain person who was said to be gone, but of course isn't gone, returns in Baptism of Fire, Chapter 5.